Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Healing Circle, which is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we're going to be talking about getting into a state of self-love and practicing staying there. That's the challenge. So please feel free to participate or just to listen. And let me welcome Kat. Kat, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really well, thank you, David.
Oh,
it's great to have everybody listen again. Welcome,
yes.
Everyone.
Yes, it is great. And it's always a joy to be with you, Kat. And I'm going to kick off the discussion tonight, and we're grateful to have Mary with us. Hopefully we'll have others, and if not, we'll just manage just fine, the three of us. So anyhow, getting into a state of self-love, you know, for me, that has been a real challenge in this life. There were a number of things that went on earlier in my life that made it difficult for me to appreciate myself and to love myself. And, you know, I've talked about it before, but I think the biggest bugaboo for me was coming to accept that I was gay and judging that part of myself as being bad, sinful, all of those nasty kinds of judgments that people can make and that I made myself. And, you know, I came to a place of accepting that that's who I was, but getting to the point of self-love, that took a long time, and I managed to kind of medicate the feelings, the negative feelings that I had towards myself, and pretended that everything was okay when it really wasn't. And it wasn't until I stopped drinking that I was able to take a look at what healing needed to be done within myself. And I think that most people find it a challenge to come to love themselves for whatever reasons. We all come from dysfunctional backgrounds, some horrible, some not so bad, but let's face it, parents are not born with a book on how to bring up children, and so there's a dysfunction in all homes, and it's just a question of degree. And we can get a lot of judgmental messages coming at us as we're growing up and tend to find ways to judge ourselves, and we don't need to do that. And if we're going to come to a place of self-love, we need to let go of judgment. We need to take an honest inventory of ourselves and look at both the light and dark sides of ourselves, because we are human and we're not all lovey-dovey all the time. And in order to truly love ourselves, we need to accept that there's stuff that we would like to improve on, that we probably have judged in the past, or that we may not even realize is there. And I'm in a program that teaches you to take a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself, and that can sound kind of harsh, but the point of it is to do it with an objective outlook at yourself, and just to recognize that you are human, subject to error, subject to self-judgment, subject to things like arrogance. And, you know, the nice thing is that there's a flip side to every so-called negative quality, and the opposite of arrogance is humility. And we all have that capacity within ourselves, even if it's not instinctual for us. So I learned to make a balance sheet, and I looked at negative traits that I had within myself and then came up with the opposite. And I came to realize that for everyone, I was somewhere on a spectrum, and mostly it was good. And in some areas, there was room for lots of improvement. And I'm getting distracted by a Facebook message, so I'm going to turn away from the computer. there's always room for improvement. And I think that it's so important to come to embrace and accept all of ourselves if we're going to be in a state of readiness to truly love ourselves. And knowing oneself is the key to getting there. And that is a lifelong mission, at least it was for me, and I trust it is for most people. I'm getting distracted again. Pardon the interruption there. Practice and staying there, I think, involves a lot of awareness. It's a matter of staying present to the moment and recognizing when we're getting a little bit off the beaten path and getting into a place of negativity or beating ourselves up. And that's certainly something that's not going to help us stay in a state of self-love. It is so important to be gentle with ourselves. It's so important to treat ourselves with the kindness that we would expect from another or hope to get from another. I think that if anybody takes stock of what it is that they would hope to get from another human being in terms of nurturing, those are the very things that we need to do to ourselves and to practice on a daily basis, especially when we're feeling like we're out of sorts. I think it is so important to focus on what is good about ourselves. What is it that we're grateful for? What is it that we are here to do? What are our passions? What are the things that we truly love about ourselves and about our lives? Those are just some of the ideas that I have to kick off the discussion. And let me call on Kat and see what she has to say, and I'm going to let this Facebook friend know that I'm busy because it's very distracting. So, Kat, please feel free.
Yeah, I like what you're saying about knowing yourself, and that's a really important thing because it's the great question, who am I? It's the big question that if you can answer that, and then you can come to a place of knowing who you are, you can't not love yourself because you're in a state of union with your inner being and your outer being. And therefore, in that state of union, you are in a place of self-love. It can be quite difficult to be in that place because you can be distracted from your inner being, and you get distracted easily by the outside world, by the corporeal world, the world of hustle and bustle and cars and trains and corporations and the way that you're expected to be because of an attitude that somebody else has and is imposing upon you, or the way of indoctrination that somebody has that you must follow so that you can fit in, so that you can achieve whatever the goal is, whether that's your goal or somebody else's. And we can really get lost in that. I don't know where in what you were saying I was reminded, but you reminded me of something that kids when I was at school used to tell other kids, and they used to actually throw the "you love yourself" as an insult. So it'd be, "oh, you love yourself," as if you're so into yourself in an egotistical way. And I don't know if that's just something that happens in Australia, but loving yourself isn't a bad thing and shouldn't be seen as a bad thing, because when you don't have a good self-image, that's when you open yourself up to depression. That's when you open yourself up to anxiety. That's when you open yourself up to self-harm, to other people harming you, to bad experiences, because you've walked away from self-love. And we can get down. We can have times when we're down, but that doesn't mean that we don't have self-love. It just means that whatever circumstances are happening at the time, maybe you feel let down, maybe you feel disappointed, maybe things didn't work out the way that you wanted, and you can have a period of time when you're not feeling happy. I mean, I was driving my children to school today, and I looked both ways at the intersection, and I saw a van. And the van said Pets in Peace, and it's a company that cremate your deceased pets, usually cats and dogs, but I'm sure they get, you know, exotic pets as well. And I immediately remembered that I'd hired them to cremate my dog. And so I had a moment. Now, I know that he's continuing on. His soul continues on. I know all of that, but I miss his body. I miss his floppy ears. I miss him staring into my eyes with love. I miss him sneaking food off the table when he thinks no one's looking. He was quite tall, so he could do that. I, you know, the naughty things and the good things. I miss everything that his body could express from his personality. So when I saw that car, I had a sadness, and it was that tinge of missing. But it didn't stop me self-loving. It just meant that I had that moment. And I think sometimes people think, oh, if you're really spiritual or if you're really self-loving, you're in a permanent state of bliss. But that's a lie, to be, you know, going around saying that you're in this permanent state of bliss. You're lying to yourself. Nobody, no true spiritual teacher will tell you that you can remain in a permanent state of bliss while you're occupying a human body, because you have emotions, and emotions will be your guidance system. And sometimes emotions are going to spark a memory is going to spark an emotion. Sometimes an experience will spark an emotion. What your spiritual teacher will tell you is that how you respond to that emotion is how you're going to be able to navigate back into bliss. Because nobody is going to be sitting there as a Jew in the Holocaust being in bliss. No one. You know, that's not going to happen. Nobody who's sitting there in some war zone where there's bullets everywhere is going to be in bliss. They may be centered, though. And so that's a difference, and that's a key. So when we have our emotions experiencing, so, you know, if you were in a war zone, for example, a very real emotion that you would have would be fear. However, practicing self-love, practicing a state of union with your inner being, and being in that experience of knowing your inner being, will allow you to acknowledge the experience of fear, yet to remain centered so that you keep your head. And then you keep your wits about you and you survive the conflict. It's the people who go nuts and who forget their inner being and their centeredness who end up running into the crossfire. So we have to just be a little bit realistic that being in self-love is not always some unadulterated experience of bliss. And Paramahansa Yogananda used to talk about being in bliss all the time, but he had a safe place to go meditate and get into that state. And when he came back out of his meditation, he would dictate books, and he would be in a state of bliss that way. So what he was actually doing was he was meditating to be in the bliss of the life force of the universe. And when he was back in his human condition, he was in a state of bliss by being in unity with his inner being and expressing his true life's purpose. And that is the big key. Don't you think, David?
Absolutely.
When you're in expressing your true life's purpose, that's when you're really feeling it, really feeling the self-love.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad that you made it very real, because we are human and we are subject to emotions and we need to honor those. It's when we try to shut those things down and pretend they're not there that they'll sneak up on us and bite us in the ass. And, you know, that has nothing to do with self-love. That just has to do with being human. And I'm really glad that you brought that up. We are on a spiritual journey, that's for sure. And we can practice things like awareness, and we can meditate. We can take walks. We can be in nature. There's so many things that we can do to raise our spirits up. But let's face it, we go through dark times in our lives, and just because we're spiritual people does not mean that we're going to remain in a state of bliss. What I was getting at before, I think, was that it's possible to navigate those waters to a certain extent. I mean, when you talk about extremes like the Holocaust and stuff, boy, that is a real challenge that I think most people would have a hard time rising above a state of despair and depression and fear, what have you. But I've discovered that I can navigate through some of the so-called negative emotions by experiencing the feeling, allowing it expression, maybe talking about it with somebody else. There are many different things I can do to raise my spirit and reach for the next best available thought, action, or feeling. And that's a real, it can be daunting. It can be daunting. I still struggle with that at times, but I found that more and more I'm able to raise myself up when I'm having a moment or two or a day or two or whatever where I'm not feeling as joyful as I would like to be. But that's a goal. It's not the end-all, be-all. We are human, and I'm glad that you talked about emotions and how spirituality does not necessarily put us into a state of bliss. So I thank you for that, Kat. Is there anything else you would like to share before we go and see what Mary would like to say?
No, I'd love to hear what Mary thinks.
Okay, let's bring Mary live. Mary, is there anything you'd like to say on the topic?
Oh, wow. Well, this is challenging, just like you said. And, you know, your path, in a way, or what you had mentioned is similar to a friend of mine's, in that he had to come to terms with being gay, and he's now a social worker working at a hotline, a crisis hotline, and he's come a long way since being suicidal 15 years ago, and now he's helping others to get past, feeling guilty or badly about themselves in some shape or form. And, you know, it wasn't easy for him to have grown up in Lebanon either, so it was particularly challenging for him. Yeah. So, you know, his conservative Middle Eastern family definitely didn't go for his being gay. But he's now in the U.S. and in New York, and, you know, he's living a much freer life. So he's grateful, and he's still, I guess, on his path to loving himself. And, you know, we both attend the Center for Spiritual Living. And, you know, it helps that we're very gentle with each other. and we support each other, and you know, we try to be grateful for what it is that is in our lives or whatever traits we do have in order to get to the point of self-love. But I suppose what's difficult is that we can be judgmental and we judge ourselves and compare ourselves to others and think that we're not enough in some shape or form. And, you know, as far as wondering or, you know, like being able to determine what our life purpose is, that's a big question, you know, for some of us, right? Like, I'm still trying to figure that out. And, you know, there's this workshop that I would like to attend in a week or so about the artist's way. Like, how is it that you can discover or recover your creativity and use your creative self to really blossom and love yourself? These are just things that come to mind, you know, when it comes to the topic of developing self-love. That's what I'm thinking at the moment. So that's what I have to add.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your input. And also, we invite callers, if there's a topic that they would like us to discuss on a future show, to raise that, and I'm not going to put you on the spot now, but when I come back to you later, if there's something that comes to mind that you'd like for us to discuss, we'd be happy to put it on the calendar for next week or the week after, whenever we can fit it in. And yeah, so let me come back to you. Let's see what Kat has to say. I have a few reflections on what you were saying. I'm going to leave your mic live. And so if there's something that you would like to say at any point, feel free to jump in and join the discussion. Kat, do you have any reflections?
Yeah, I totally understand from a personal perspective about the not good enough story, and not just the not good enough story that person might tell themselves, but the not good enough story that other people tell you. You know, as a person who I grew up in a family of academics, and agnostic, and my mother's Church of United Church Christian, and here I turned out to be a spiritualist, and I started working as a reader, and I was on a trajectory to become a doctor. And
wow.
that didn't end up happening for various reasons. So my family rejected what I did in the beginning. It was a big, like, kerfuffle, you know. And from them, but also from other members of the community, I always got the "you're not good enough because you do this work." And I'm not talking about just people who knew me. And most spiritual people who do spiritual work will have had the experience of atheists and Christians and other religious people, but generally in this country, it's the Christians who tend to attack us. Either verbally attack us or will, you know, make snide remarks and that sort of thing. So you've got to rise above it. And it can be quite difficult because you're doing what you're driven to do. I mean, and because of people telling me I'm not good enough, I tried to reject myself time and again. I tried to go into other work. I tried quite a bit to get out of this profession and into other work. But that wasn't me. And even though I could do it and I could excel, it wasn't me. This work was me. And so it kept drawing me back in. People would keep ringing me wanting a reading. Someone would say, "Hey, can you come speak at my spiritual church or center?" It'd just keep drawing me back in because this was where I was meant to be. So at some point I had to turn around and I had to say, well, I love me. I am me, you know, F years old. You don't like me? Too bad. Go stare at a tree and get over yourself, you know. Don't put it on me. Your belief system is not my belief system. So why do I have to drop myself and then convert to your way? But that there is something that really aggravates me, this attitude that person A has a certain belief system, so they feel they must impose that on person B, and person B is expected to realize, for whatever reason, misguided reason that person A has, that, oh, I was wrong in my belief system, so I should just drop it and go with you and completely reject myself. It doesn't work, because if you're in spiritual work, just as if you are a gay person, you know that you're gay. You don't believe you're gay. You know. Belief implies that there is some wiggle room to learn and grow and change your mind. A knowing is that there is, it's cemented, it's the law. And so I know that there is spirituality because I've experienced it. I know the connection. I know it to be true. I experienced it since I was a kid. And David knows that he's gay. He doesn't believe it. He knows it. And there's no way that anybody has the right to try and walk up to anyone else and say, you are not good enough because of the way that you think. Now, some people out there are thinking things that are extremely misguided. Their thoughts are to hurt others. Now, I'm not saying that those people should be or glorified or thought to be good in some way. No, if you're trying to hurt somebody else, you're making a misguided decision. However, the way that human beings are set up is that they're always trying to feel better. So even somebody who is trying to hurt somebody else, their motivation will be to feel better in some way for themselves. It's not necessarily a good thing, and I'm not saying it is. But we can't impose our will on other people and try and force them to think the way that we think. And having experienced it firsthand and felt extremely lost for many years, I know that until I started to find myself and say, you know, I love myself, and I found my community of people who tell me that they love me, I stopped listening. And I still live with people who I know that they care about me, but my partner's an atheist. He, if you sat down and asked him, he'd tell you that my way of thinking doesn't make any sense to him, and he thinks that in time I'll wake up to myself. And I know that he loves me, but he really does not have any faith in his mind for my way of thinking. So I need to stay in my place of self-love, and I do that by staying in connection with my inner being and staying in connection with what I know. And you were saying, Mary, people don't know who they are, and that is so true. And I wish that people would be taught that when they went to school, that one of the priority subjects, mandatory subjects throughout schooling is, who am I? And it's gathered up from what you're good at. You know, from the beginning, who am I? And maybe it's a reflection at the end of the day of what you did that you did well and you enjoyed, and you put that in the who am I chart. And after a while, you start to form a self-image of yourself, of who you are. Because really, that is who you are. It's who you're good, what you're good at, what you love, what you enjoy, what makes you happy, that's constructive, what gives you pleasure, how you help others in a way that pleases you as well as them. These things make up who am I. And you were talking about creative action. Creativity is it is with the number three. It is the number of creation and communication, creativity. It is the connection. When you look at a number three, you can see it sort of looks like you could plug it in, plug a device into it, like it's a wall plug. If you looked at it in a two-dimensional thing, oh no, I'm going somewhere with that. I won't go anywhere. It's a plug-in. You plug in with the number three. You plug in with creativity. You're plugging into the Great Spirit, into the universe. You're plugging into your inner connection. So, you know, I encourage you to go to that workshop if you can, because that's anyone is floating around going, I'm not happy, I'm not in self-love. I would encourage you to get into nature and get into creativity. Anyway, I think I've ranted long enough now.
Oh, that's wonderful, Kat. You always have wonderful things to share. Mary, is there anything else you'd like to share at this point?
Oh, well, just to say that I can relate to what Kat was talking about with respect to her partner being an atheist and how people, like a person A wants person B to believe what person A believes because person B needs to come to their senses. And, you know, this is common. I think that, or more common than we would think. And, you know, maybe I'm thinking that spiritual people have a tendency to run into this problem more often than non-spiritual people, just from what it is that I've encountered myself and heard from others who have walk the spiritual path. And I just kind of wonder, well, what is the meaning behind this? Is it to get us to the point where we have no choice but to love ourselves? That's a question that I have. Like, okay,
yes.
Well,
yes.
That's a great question.
Yes.
You know, I was thinking go ahead, Kat.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No,
I was just
no
going to
problem.
Say that people who are not spiritual are not, they're in disconnection. They think that they are in connection, but they're disconnected from their inner being. And, I mean, I've heard people who are atheists on the radio here in Australia turn around and say that they will write off somebody who says that they're spiritual straight away and just think that they're an idiot. And it's an arrogance that is not shared amongst spiritual people, because most spiritual people are also very, very aware, open and understanding of all things science. Very, very clear, you know, reason and logic is there. Most spiritual people are balancing reason and logic with intuition and creativity and coming into connection. But the world has this connection, and that's why we get that. Go on, David.
Well, I was just thinking about some things that Mary said before and now, and I was reflecting on how, in terms of me coming to be a spiritual person, it has been a journey. It's been a journey through different things like agnosticism, self-doubt that came from places of shame. And again, that was connected to being gay. But I think it also had a lot to do with messages that I received from other people about what I should do or who I should be. And that did not help me come to terms with the person that I really was. It was confusing to me. And I think ultimately the goal, as I see it now, is to be true to myself. I was reflecting back on where I was when I was a senior in high school and what I wanted to pursue at that point in my life, which was my passion, and it was acting. I wanted to become an actor. I wanted to go to New York and study with one of the acting greats, Stella Adler, who was a student of Stanislavski. And my father said to me, I mean, he's God bless his soul, he's still alive at 92, and I saw him today. But at that point in time, you know, he was an engineer and very practical. And he said, David, how are you going to make a living at that? He said, you've got such a good head on your shoulders. You've been good at organizing things, running carnivals when you were 10 years old. Why don't you go to school to study business? And I wanted to please him. I was a people pleaser. But I wasn't being true to myself. I didn't have enough self-love or feeling of self-worth to stand up for what I wanted to do, what my passion was. And so I said, okay, Dad. And I went to business school. And it was okay. I did well at it. And I minored in acting, but that kind of fell by the wayside because I had to concentrate on my major studies. And I went into the business world, and I excelled, but I was not happy. And because of other problems with lack of self-love, I fell prey to cataclysmic depression, which is different from situational depression. As a result, I ended up leaving the business world and eventually became a social worker. And I did that for over 20 years, and it was satisfying, but still, it wasn't my passion. And I've discovered my passion today as writing. And, you know, it's a creative pursuit like acting. And I'm very happy at what I do now. It feels as if I found my calling. And it's been a circuitous route to becoming true to myself as far as that sense of purpose goes. But the larger sense of purpose comes from my spiritual practice and removing myself from influences that were toxic to my soul, that were toxic to my sense of well-being, to my ability to love myself. And shame was a big, big bugaboo for me. And again, I was thinking about your friend, Mary, and how compounded that shame must have been for him coming from the culture he was in and some of the messages about being gay there, which are much worse than they are here. You know, it's just wonderful to be able, and so freeing, to be able to let those chains of servitude to other people's desires for you or other people's judgments of you fall by the wayside. And so God bless your friend. I have been in a place of suicidal thinking and action in the past, and it's a horrible place to be. And I'm so grateful your friend has come to enjoy a happy, happy life for himself.
Yeah, and you too.
Thank you. Me too. Yeah, absolutely. Hooray for all of us, right? Yeah. What would either of you like to say about being true to yourselves? Because I really believe that is an ultimate goal to be on a pathway to self-love.
Well,
being true to yourself is listening to that inner voice and acting on it. You know, that to me is being true to yourself. It's when that inner voice says, no, I don't want to do that. And you actually speak up and say, no, I don't want to do that. That's being true. Oh, yes, I do want to do that. That is also being true. And we can be held back by fear to speak our truth. And it takes practice. It's much easier for a child who hasn't been beaten down to speak their inner truth. And we need to encourage our youth to speak their inner truth. But as adults, who've been beaten up a bit by life. You know, one of the things I grew up with was being afraid of other people's emotions. So what I I had to learn, and I still have to consciously practice it, because it's such an ingrained fear that somebody else is going to not only be unhappy with me if I speak my inner truth, they're going to emotionally and verbally attack me because of it. So I have to really consciously stand in my power. And when I say in my power, in my self-love to speak my truth. And that when you're in that state of self-love, you're in unity with your inner and outer being. And therefore, nothing can move you. So that would be what I'd have to say about that. What do you think, Mary?
Well, yes, and it's also a challenge to get to the point where you, as an adult, can stand up and be true to yourself, regardless of what others say. You know, like I come from a family where I'm the maverick, and my brothers wanted to be artists, and they ended up doing more conventional things. Like one became a business person, and the other one became a doctor, and they gave up themselves in order to live a certain kind of lifestyle. And in order for me to be true to myself, where I have actually pursued a cultural profession, I've had to carve out my own niche, geographically speaking. Like, I'm on the opposite coast of my brothers, and I find it hard to really open up to them, because they've, in my eyes anyways, sold out. I mean, they enjoy a nice lifestyle as a result of selling out, but, you know, they may not necessarily feel happy inside, but they enjoy the fleeting pleasures of life. But here I am trying to stand in my own strength, and I know that only when I feel at peace with myself and when I truly love myself that I will be unflappable. And so I'm trying to work on that through meditation. And I will practice more of it. And I was actually gifted a meditation teacher certification program. So I will go through with that, hoping that it will help center me more, so that when I do visit my relatives, I don't become my old self, where I'm the youngest of the children in our family, and I will still fall back into old patterns and dynamics, even though I'm now a fully grown adult. So, you know, I'm working on becoming a centered person who does love herself, so that I can be myself regardless of what others around me say, especially my family members. You know, like when people from your family who have so much influence over you, or maybe you allow them to have influence over you because you grew up with them and you want your family to love you, you just struggle more with coming out, so to speak, regardless of whether you're coming out because of your sexuality or because your beliefs are a little bit more liberal. It's just a way, it's just a struggle for people to get over the judgment that they think they're going to receive or have received in the past from their family members. But, you know, the only way that you can truly do so is by loving yourself and standing firm in your beliefs, but in a loving way towards others. And that's another thing that I've had to learn how to do over time, accepting my brothers and my conservative family members, so that there's not just self-love, but love for humanity as a whole, regardless of our differences.
Isn't it interesting? That's one of the things that your family has taught you, is that through their judgment of you, you're learning the greater compassion towards humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm hearing you.
Go
ahead, Kat.
By having that bigger perspective, you can look at humanity as a whole, but you can also realize that they are where they are at because that's their soul's progression. And it's not a race, you know. They're just at where they're at. And just as the rest of humans are at wherever they're at in their way of thinking, it actually is a sense of freedom to have so much self-love that you are then able to see other human beings in the light that you can see that they're just where they're at, and it sets you free by setting them free.
Mm.
And then by being in that place, you no longer need to feel the judgment of your family. So they may feel that they can impose it upon you because of the way that you've grown. You no longer need to feel it. Instead, you can just beam love back at them.
Hmm.
Because in the end, you know, we're all going to die. Whoever dies first in your family is whoever it is. And you don't want to be sitting there going, well, I was angry at them because they judged me all my life. Instead, it would be so much better to look at them and say, I love them for teaching me compassion towards themselves, but also to the greater human society and ultimately towards myself.
Wow. That's lovely.
Your story is beautiful. Go on, David, sorry.
Oh, no problem. That's what happens when all the mics are open. I just wanted to applaud you for standing in your truth, Mary. And I hear so much self-love coming from you. I hear compassion coming from you toward your family members. I hear you looking at their situation dispassionately, without judgment. There was something else I wanted to say too, and it's eluding me at the moment. But I think that when we come into a place of self-love, that's when we can truly give of ourselves that love to another person. And I think a lot of people are blind to that. They think that they can love other people and not realize that the first part of doing that is to love yourself and to be true to yourself, and then you can share that with other people in a more genuine fashion.
Yeah. Beautiful.
It's the gateway, isn't it, David?
Mm-hmm.
Once you rise above your own hurt and you start to realize what your soul is being taught, you begin to let go. And there's so much freedom in that, that self-love becomes a deep well of freedom.
Mm.
There's nothing like inner freedom.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's a process.
It's
a journey because...
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. I was just thinking that it's a whole process that one needs to go through to get to the point where you experience self-love. You have to go through a lot of anger and resentment first.
Mm.
At least I did, you know, with my family because I felt belittled. And then I needed to go away and have space for myself where I could strengthen myself so that when I do meet with them, I can do so from a strength, from a position of strength, but not one in which I would overpower them. Not that I could anyways. I'm the youngest child and I'm the only female. But yeah, for me it was about going to the dark side and then coming back to the light. I don't know if that's just me.
No, I totally concur with that. And I also was relating to what you were sharing earlier about falling into a certain role in a family system and finding it difficult not to be drawn back into that at a later point in time because it's just so ingrained.
Yeah.
But I think that we do need to go away. We do need to remove ourselves in order to come to terms with all those aspects of ourself, the false aspects, and what is true. And when we discover the truth, then we do set ourselves free.
Yeah. And it takes time.
Kat, do you? Yeah, it does.
I'm the youngest of four kids, and I've got three older brothers. And
wow.
For a long time, I felt like my family just looked at me like I was the unwanted family member, just a piece of shit person. And I often was spoken to in such a way. And something happened in 2016 which caused me to stand up to my family and say no more. And I walked away. I did not fight with them. I just chose not to speak to anybody anymore. I just chose to go speak to a psychologist who was bound by the Privacy Act to shut her mouth and listen and help me. And because I don't like gossip and I don't want to cause problems and harm. And so there was an implosion in the family because it would have been easier for them, I think, if I had gone around and attacked everybody. Well, that's not my deal. My deal is that I need to go and understand. I need to go and think. I need to self-reflect and I need to find that inner freedom so that I can move forward because the toxicity was far greater than I could cope with. And I'd been through a major operation when all of this had happened. I was in the recovery stage. And I had sleep deprivation from having a very sick baby. And there's a lot of things that went down. But ultimately, I stood in my power. I went and sought help to find that power and to make sure that the way that I was thinking was correct, the way that I saw the situation was correct, and because I didn't want to be imagining things or sticking ideas into it that weren't there, which we can often do when we're distressed. We can add to a situation without that being part of reality. So I did seek advice. And so anyone who's listening who's going through a situation where they are standing up into their personal power and standing in that self-love, I would recommend that you go and seek advice to support it because you will become more independent. You will become more powerful. You will become more centered, not self-centered in an egotistical way, but yourself will be centered. And you will be tested. You'll be tested a lot. And you may continuously be tested throughout your time, but people will start to see you differently. And that's the key, is that the stronger you be within yourself, and at some point you've got to put a line in the sand and say, boundaries here, do not cross, and turn your back on the toxicity. It doesn't mean you turn your back on love. It doesn't mean you no longer love those family members. I deeply love my family members. And, you know, I'd take a bullet for them. I'd push them out of the way of a train and take the hit of the train for anyone in my family. But I will not take toxicity from them, because that is not right. And I don't want my children to follow the path that I was on, which was to have people treat me like crap just because I was me. So I think, and there's something about the youngest child, and I remember reading it in a psychology journal, and I don't quote me because I don't have all the information in front of me, but they have worked out that children in order of birth have certain ways of thinking and acting, and the youngest child tends to be more eclectic in their work and their view of life. So, you know, there must be millions of youngest kids out there who are all in the same boat. All, you know, everybody thinks they're the flake. Everybody thinks that they're the one who needs to smarten up, all of that. And meanwhile, they're the one that's probably having the most profound experience of all, because they're the most connected to their soul.
Mm-hmm.
So stand in that power.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, we're running out of time here. And Mary, this is the first time you've joined us, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, we end the program. Well, I'm so glad you're with us. You've had so many wonderful insights to share. We end the program with a brief meditation, and Kat has agreed to do that for tonight. But I wondered, before we go into meditation, is there any topic you'd like us to cover next week or the week after?
Oh, wow. Well, I'll be out of town, and so I won't be able to join you guys.
Oh, that's all right. Well, we can do it sometime when you're able to join us. Of course, you can, I don't know how you're tuning in tonight, but you can call in from the telephone wherever and connect with us. We are on every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. So, you know, I again am saying that if you would like to put a topic out there, we'll do it at a time when you can tune in.
Yeah, like spiritual awakening, maybe? Is that too broad?
Okay. Yeah, that's great. When would you like us to do that?
Let's see. Oh, wow. That's the thing. I'm going to be visiting my family, and I'm not going to be able to tune in so easily because I'll be traveling very far. So it would be in the new year.
Well, let's do that. Let's plan on doing that in the new year, maybe like the second or third weekend in January. Would that work for you?
Yeah, that would be great.
I'll put it down for the second weekend, whatever that is. And we sure appreciate you joining us tonight. So I'm going to turn it over to Kat. Unless you have any last-minute thoughts you'd like to share, I'm going to turn it over to Kat to do the meditation.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. It's been our pleasure. I shouldn't speak for Kat. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
Lovely to have met you. Thanks for sharing, and your contribution's been beautiful.
Oh, thanks. Well, what you have both remarked have been really eye-opening and deep.
Well, that means a lot to hear. I appreciate the feedback.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's go into the meditation. let's close our eyes and get comfortable wherever we're sitting or laying. And take three deep breaths. As we take a deep breath in, we're going to say, I am. And as we breathe out, we're going to say, love. So breathe in, I am. Breathe out, love. I am. Love. I am love. And I want you to let your body go really heavy. Everything's heavy. Legs are heavy. Torso, head. Everything's just heavy and safe. I'd like you to keep breathing, but focus your mind on your heart center. And just keep breathing in the words, I am, and breathe out the words, love. Keep your mind in your heart center. I'd like you to focus on the spinal cord and feel it as a big world of light. It's an extension cord. Extend it out of your coccyx and into the earth and plug it in. And extend it out of your crown chakra and into the sun and plug it in. Bring the energy up from Mother Earth and down from Father Sky into your heart center. And I really hear that loudness coming now. I am love. And as the boom from the inner I am love and the outer I am love comes through your heart center, imagine the water in every cell in your body vibrates, because within every cell in your body is your subconscious. And let your subconscious vibrate with the word, I am love. And tell your subconscious, I am love. And hear Mother Earth say, I am love. And hear the Son, Father Sky say, I am love. And bring the Trinity of your subconscious, Mother Earth and Father Sky together in your heart center. And realize all along you've been hearing your inner being say, I am love. I want you to become more aware of the rhythm of your heart. Boom, 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 boom. And I'd like you to see the word written in your mind's eye. I am love. And I'd like you to infuse them into your heartbeat. And now your heartbeat sings the words, I am love. Boom, boom, boom. I am love. Boom, boom, boom. huge feat. I am love. I am love. Let that truth radiate from your physical heart, through your heart center, through all the waters and cells of your body, anchored in Mother Earth and Father Sky. Let you be centered in that truth, and let it be always your truth. And when you're ready, open your eyes.
Thank you, Kat.
Yes.
Thank you.
And so for all of those listening tonight or in the future, on behalf of Kat and myself, I wish you peace and great love. Good night, Mary.
Good night. Thank you so much, David and Kat.
Thank you for joining us.
I enjoyed it.
Likewise. God bless.
God bless you.
Thank you.